Chapter 5. Poppy Samuels is bouncing on one of the two mini trampolines that make up much of her office at the Bouncy Bouncy Trampoline Fun Park. She's dressed as always in a one-piece tracksuit, this time floral, and her brunette hair is kept short and simple for minimum jumping upkeep. She always feels the most relaxed, healthiest, and yes, happiest when she's mid-air and free from the financial troubles of running her privately owned business that used to be quite lucrative until those idiot International Association of Trampoline Park officials shut her down. Was that unfortunate children's birthday party that ended with three injuries, two of them serious, really her fault? Hadn't those young folks refused to follow the posted rules anybody could see? And what good's a parent-signed liability waiver if the court ignores this valid contract? Why was Poppy responsible for some oaf of a child jumping on top of another one, fracturing his leg? Shouldn't her errant parents have been keeping an eye on this delinquent who was wearing shoes while trampolining, despite warnings? Why is the other kid's bruised pelvis Poppy's fault? And don't even start on the birthday boy, the one who supposedly broke both arms after tearing through one of the older, worn trampoline nets and landing on the concrete floor below. How was Poppy negligent just because she had innocently forgotten to put the out-of-order sign back on that overpriced piece of equipment after cleaning up from the very busy Saturday night before? Poppy ran Bouncy Bouncy all by her 22-year-old self. She can't do everything. Despite the largest single jury verdict against a commercial trampoline park in the United States, and Poppy plans to get back not only her gigantic fine but her attorney's fees, too, once this injustice is finally overturned, her most loyal customers refuse to jump ship. Like a defiant speakeasy in Prohibition, Bouncy is up and running. Illegally. Luckily, her landlady, Miss Betty, also known as Lipa, the 200-plus-pound gymnast whose idea of all-you-can-eat and bounce night really took off, has been a loyal customer from the beginning. Lipa immediately embraced Poppy's idea of disguising the place with a fake storefront to fool the authorities and keep it open. When the chips are down, extreme jumpers stick together, and today is their first fundraiser. Oh, this Volvo drives pretty well, thinks Marcia as she cruises out of the city in the car seized from her potential molester. She should have been on that show to catch a predator, the women's version. Yes, where she's headed is kind of near the dreaded Dutch village, but she can go another route to avoid even a glimpse of her past. She's exhausted, but not defeated. Her plans may have been interrupted, but she's back on track. And Operation Ditch Daryl has already been a success. Now for the next step. As she stops for a red light, she's relieved. Almost nothing can happen except getting carjacked, and what are the odds of that considering what she's been through today? But then, out of the corner of her eye, she sees some man, another goddamn man, frantically gesturing to her from his vehicle. With a certain amount of irritation, she rolls down her window a little, but not far enough for any wildlife to fly in and invade her mouth. "Excuse me," he whines. "I'm kind of lost. Can you tell me how to get to the Owings Mills Mall?" Well, that's a first. A male without a GPS asking for directions. Usually they'd rather die than admit they don't know where they're going. Of course, Marcia does know where this now-demolished mall once was. She has fond memories of the Saks Fifth Avenue that used to be there, especially its rather naive returns department she scammed several times. Even if the mall was rebuilt and reopened under a different name fairly recently, why should she tell him how to get anywhere? Had they had the pleasure of an introduction? Is he offering any kind of fee for this information? "Sure," she answers sweetly. "Turn right up here on Joppa Road and go about 3 miles until you hit York Road and make a right and just follow that and you'll see it right on the left." "Thank you so much," she shouts cheerily, as she even waves him to cut in front of her to make the turn. Of course, these are the exact wrong directions, and just that fact alone makes her feel better, more intellectually advanced, yet practical, and yes, prettier. Poppy's rigged the place so she never really has to stop bouncing. She can fly up and down and then project herself to the far left and land on a larger mat in the main tramp room and then hurl herself to the left wall, ricochet back to the main springboard, and then with one final burst of adrenaline, jump up to the specially designed ceiling tramp with a super-duper skyboard brand of springs where she uses her hand to propel herself back down in a front full somersault, landing on the bouncy, bouncy landing pad with grace. It's quite an entrance. Her customers are thrilled to be leaders in the radical trampoline movement. And today, they've put their money where their feet are, right here in the clandestine recreation center. What other tramp park, especially one of this size, has hosted drag competition bouncing nights? Campolina, as she calls herself proudly, has been fearless about getting the word out in the gay community, and Poppy owes her big time. Some of these queens really flip their wigs doing back somersaults. It's a diverse lot here at Bouncy Bouncy, and Campolina's generous cash donation proves her dedication. Volta, a 6-foot-tall Caucasian female bouncer who has been unfairly rejected from Olympic tryouts, can do a mean full twist, despite having only one arm. It was her business how she lost it. No one has ever asked. She had organized supporters for other legal fundraisers in the past, but now that the chosen few had gone underground, it was her own cold, hard cash that was paying the electric bills. And God bless Springboard Sam and Doubleback Barbara, that African-American couple who had never revealed their real names but were once a yodeling musical duo who performed while trampolining under the name the Twitching Tonsils. They stayed even after the tramp troubles, as that fateful party night of shame became known in the trade. Despite being labeled safety scofflaws and gravity conspirators by the authorities, they aren't afraid of frivolous lawsuits any more than Poppy is. Having an altitude is something all tonight's guests were proud of. They are a movement in the making. Marcia cruises Bel Air Road slowly and turns off on a street that looks vaguely familiar. Bouncy Bouncy used to be somewhere around here. Of course, on their coded Facebook announcement she spied on once, they really don't give the exact address for their ridiculous fundraiser. She's been there before, the time she boosted the wallets out of Poppy's customers' handbags on Talent Day. Talent, oh yeah. An idiot on a trampoline who juggled. Real talent. And don't even get her started on those two yodeling air tumblers. I mean, really. Marcia's not even sure what Poppy's business looks like on the outside these days. She knows there's been some legal trouble, so at least that ridiculous sign with the cartoon children springing up in the air like rubber balls must be covered up. She remembers some kind of low-rent convenience store on the corner, and this looks like it could be it, but it's now all fixed up. Maybe you could finally purchase a good box of crackers in the neighborhood. A lawnmower shop called Mower Mania? Could that be it? Probably. What a cheesy name to hide behind. That daughter of hers will never learn. She must pay. Pay through the teeth for polluting Marcia's birth canal. Wouldn't you know it, some whacker fuck stole Daryl's already stolen car right when he was under the bridge. Hotwired that tickler's piece of shit truck just when he was giving himself first aid on his dick. Now what? How will he get back to Poppy's? How will he fuck Marcia on this rightful day of pay? He's now standing on the entrance ramp to the Baltimore Beltway that was luckily nearby, even though walking to it was a real pain in the dick. He's holding a sign saying anywhere as he hitchhikes in his homeless disguise, a dirty hoodie he found back in the encampment with the words mole people printed on the front and a ripped lampshade on his head he's wearing as a hat. His crotch bandage treatment gives a ridiculous bulge to the same pair of red jeans now covered in grime. He definitely looks very different from the chauffeur he was seen as in those airport surveillance videos on TV. No one in their right mind would ever pick him up, though. Even he is starting to realize this. So when the first car to pass pulls over with a screech to the side of the road, he can't believe his good luck. He runs as fast as he can with a busted dick and punctured balls up to the passenger side of the junker with several dents and looks in to see a very creepy man with rotten teeth dressed in a hunter's camouflage outfit leering at him from behind the wheel. Daryl's not sure what damaged sexuality this guy is, but he knows a freakazoid when he sees one. One thing he'd like to know, why, oh why, is he such a pervert magnet? He gets in. Want some hooch? Asks the creepo 2 minutes into the ride. But even Daryl knows not to accept liquor offered by a stranger from inside an old peanut jar. No thanks, says Daryl, as he painfully adjusts the splint inside his pants, which makes his crotch stick up in an almost comical way. Well, comical if you weren't Daryl. I'm Jimbo, and I'm looking for some homeless action, the driver announces without the slightest bit of embarrassment. You're in luck, teases Daryl, spreading his legs to shift the splint to an even more vertical angle. Crusty crotches and drifter balls, that's my specialty, says Jimbo, drooling. Daryl thinks fast, grabs a rusty can opener he sees on the floor and holds it up to Jimbo's neck. Detour ahead, he announces, suddenly all business. Please don't kill me. I'm on disability too, begs the bumfucker. Yeah, well, I'm a hetero hobo, trumpets Daryl proudly, and we're on a very different route. Stop this ridiculous bouncing, shouts Marcia over the din of multiple springing elastic coils as she barges her way into the main trampoline area of Bouncy Bouncy. Poppy is happily hurling herself upward as her fellow acrobatic fanatics spring up and down like crazed jack-in-the-boxes, showering her with $10 and $20 donation bills. Poppy is just going into a lazy-back, easy-back somersault when she spots her mother. The sight of Marcia used to trigger panic attacks in Poppy. Now her system just shuts down. She faints. Watch your wallets, yells Volta mid-flip as the rest of the disciples, and really, what else could you call them, leap to Poppy's unconscious side to form a protective shield around her. As Marcia tries to approach their cache area, Lipa grabs up the alms each time she lands. Mrs. Sprinkle, Campolina says with as much civility as you can muster while doing a stomach drop wearing a sparkled mini-dress, you know Poppy doesn't want you on the premises. My daughter is out of her mind, Marcia announces matter-of-factly, ignoring the rebuke as Volta attempts to get a coming-to Poppy to take a sip of a high-energy drink. We're all crazy for trampolines, argues back Lipa before she pulls off a flawless, full-twist, straight-front somersault. We are raising money to continue our journey of trampoline resistance, adds Volta, cradling Poppy's head in her arms. Well, you won't get far up in the air, counters Marcia as she tries to push through the bouncing followers toward her daughter's stash. All causes begin with marches right here on the ground, and that's where you belong. There is no time for public protests when you are fighting for your financial life, pipes in Twisted Billy, an Asian newcomer who has turned over his entire life savings of $340 before Marcia intruded. Because of his young age and double-jointed talent, he can jump with his legs and arms wrapped around him like a pretzel and does so as a defensive move that renders Marcia speechless for a second. Trampoline park upkeep funds don't grow on trees, you know, adds Volta as she bounds up from Poppy and completes a hand and knee turnover and with amazing dexterity, considering she has only one arm, scoops up the last bill, which is stuck in a coiled spring that still needs repair. With what she thinks is a magician's sleight of hand, Volta passes the cash to Campolina, who stashes it with the rest of the donated kitty in a bouncy, bouncy water bottle, one of the few marketing items Poppy had manufactured and still owes money on. Marcia thinks these low-echelon tumblers may not realize she sees the proceeds getting stashed under the side deck of a nearby damaged trampoline, but she wasn't born yesterday. She was scamming three-card money games even before she got out of Dutch Village. You can't grift a grifter. That's one thing Marcia knows for sure. Bounce, whispers Campolina into Poppy's ear as she starts to do exactly that herself. jump, orders Lipa quietly, but firmly, as she too begins moving upward in defiance of Marsha's attempted feet-on-the-floor domination. Up-ole-yi-o, yodels springboard Sam to his leader in a repeated sharp shift in pitch as he lands next to her. Danny-ai-yo, warbles back double-back Barbara in a sudden falsetto alpine voice as she propels herself upward with a new musical combativeness. Blast off, shouts Twisted Billy as he launches his irregular limbs upward with a grace only he can achieve. Poppy begins bouncing, at first slowly, but then building in speed and confidence, gaining altitude with each leap, jumping higher and higher, almost as if this strenuous exercise could propel her out of her mother's orbit forever. I say no to static abuse, she yells as her fellow jumpers join her in a chorus line of leapfrog-like ballet. Up and down they go in confident moral superiority, but Marsha never loses eye contact. Her features may freeze in the face of lunacy, yet her fingers are darting with the speed of light until she finds the hidden bank of money right there below them. They're still bouncing like idiots when she runs out the door. She can hear their shouts of outrage when they discover her theft just as she rounds the corner to Bel Air Road. Their pain is nothing compared to what Marsha's was like at childbirth.